folks for coming out tonight. This is a very nice venue. It's my first time in the room here. It's nice and intimate. I'd also encourage you to move up to the front. It's a lot more friendlier than a bunch of empty seats. I'm sure you're all very friendly people. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. So time is short. I've got a big topic to tackle, plus a theme for your conference, which is also fairly daunting because it's general, but that's also important because it's meant to weave a bunch of themes together. So I'm going to try to, in the time I have, quickly cover five main things. First, I'm going to give you an overview of the organization I work for. Then I'm going to give you an overview of the issue that we're concerned with, poverty in Canada. Then I'll talk about the three sub-themes, possibilities for organizing, problems for organizing, and priorities for organizing, of course, focused on the issue of poverty in Canada. So about my organization, the National Anti-Poverty Organization was founded in 1971. So we've been around a while. We have a national reach and primarily a focus at the federal level. This group was founded to provide an opportunity for low-income citizens across the country to be organized to interact with the federal scene, because the federal government, as I'll get into, has a huge, huge, in my view, the single most important role to play in fighting poverty in the country. As Tara mentioned, our mission is, and it's an ambitious one, but it is our mission, and we're not going to rest until it's completed, is to see the eradication of poverty in Canada by promoting income and social security for all Canadians, and by promoting poverty eradication as a human rights obligation. We have a vision that our board of directors, actually I'm going to talk about the board first. One of the unique features of NAPO is that ever since its founding, it's always been governed by people who have the lived experience of poverty. And they range from people who grew up in poverty as children, to people who have been homeless, to people with disabilities. And of the 12 directors we have now, I'd say probably 8 or 9 of them are in low income, 2 or 3 or 4, not so much. But everyone definitely with fairly lasting and profound experience of poverty, and that really is important for informing the work that we do. Our board is spread across the country from St. John's to Victoria and from the biggest city in the country, Toronto, to the tiny community, the flying community of Old Crow, Yukon. We do have some Aboriginal representation. We are lacking, actually, people from the immigrant communities. So, and diversity is important in the work that we do, so there's a gap to be filled there. We are actually looking at a name change very soon to help rebrand the organization and the founding of some chapters across the country, possibly starting with Saskatchewan. So about poverty in Canada, this is a big, complex issue. It's really hard to do it justice in the 2 minutes I'm going to try to allot to it. What is poverty? Well, everyone's going to have their own definition of that, but the United Nations Committee on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights defines it this way, and I think it's a good definition. They describe it as a human condition characterized by sustained or chronic deprivation of the resources, capabilities, choices, security, and power necessary for the enjoyment of an adequate standard of living and other civil, cultural, economic, political, and social rights. It's a big mouthful, but it actually does encapsulate, if you will, the complexity of the issue. So poverty is not just about hunger or homelessness, and solving poverty goes well beyond giving to food banks or homeless shelters. Canada has no official means of defining or measuring the extent of this condition. This is one of the challenges, which I'll speak to when I get to possibilities. When we talk about poverty, and people always ask the question, how many people live in poverty and so forth, none of us truthfully can say, and the government can't say, and no one can say. So we end up using inadequate metrics to sort of approximate poverty. The most common one is called the low-income cutoff, which many groups refer to. It's a measure of income, it's a relative income of a group of people relative to everybody else. And when we look at the low-income cutoff numbers from 2006, we find that about 3.4 million people were living in a state of low income. And so many groups, including our own, have said, well, okay, that's roughly 3.4 million people living in poverty, including 800,000 children and youth. So this is about 11% of the national population. But certain demographic groups are far more at risk of poverty than others. Aboriginal people, people with disabilities, recent immigrants, single parents with young children, but particularly single moms with young children, are some of the main demographic groups. A more robust metric of poverty, a more informed way of understanding the issue could result in the fact that we would have a higher number or a higher percentage of people being considered to be living in poverty in New York City. That's what happened just very recently. The city was very unhappy with the U.S. measurement of poverty. They did a much more robust investigation into what poverty really means in the New York City context. And when they did that, they found that the poverty rate was actually 20% higher than what the U.S. government was saying. At Maple, we see poverty through three principal lens: the lens of fairness, that we see this as a problem of equitable distribution of wealth in Canada, of economic impact, that the cost of poverty is huge. A study was released just today on the economic cost of poverty in Ontario, and the figure is $32 to $38 billion per year. This is the first, as far as we know, economic costing of poverty in the country, so it's a very significant development. And also human rights. And on December the 10th will be the 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. I'll just briefly read Article 25. It says, everyone has the right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of himself and his family, pardon the gender bias here, including food, clothing, housing, and medical care, necessary social services, and the right to security in the event of unemployment, sickness, disability, widowhood, old age, or other lack of livelihood in circumstances beyond his or her control. So, possibilities for organizing to combat poverty. I think the first thing I'll say is that right now, as you well know, there's tremendous uncertainty in the country, economic uncertainty. Many of you may be feeling that, and quite understandably. So economic and financial insecurity of more and more Canadians, and this provides, in our view, more of an opportunity to engage more Canadians in this discussion. Because it's not just the currently poor who are suffering, but potentially many others could fall into that category. It's an optimal time. Poverty is on the radar screen of governments. 9 in 10 Canadians, according to a recent poll, want governments to act. We have provincial strategies in place in Newfoundland and Quebec, not perfect, but a good start, and strategies emerging in Ontario, Nova Scotia, and New Brunswick. We have some very exciting local and municipal initiatives, including one called Vibrant Communities, which is across in many different cities across Canada. We have parliamentary momentum. Two important Senate reports came out in June. That have very important recommendations or observations on this issue. The House of Commons HUMA Committee, it's an acronym, H-U-M-A, is going to be renewing their hearings into poverty across the country. This is a very important opportunity for us. And we have real parliamentary champions, and I'll just name three: Tony Martin from the NDP, Ken Dryden from the Liberals, and Hugh Siegel from the Conservatives. He's a senator. We have a couple of major national coalitions, Make Poverty History and Campaign 2000. Campaign 2000 tomorrow releases its 2009 annual report on child and family poverty in Canada. They'll release the report here in Ottawa. Big event in Calgary next May called the Canadian Social Forum promises to be a milestone event on this issue, because the total focus of the forum is on poverty. Real opportunity to emerge from that milestone event with a new and larger and more diverse coalition to work on this, and a lot of groups are very excited about this event. And finally, and most importantly, I think, is that there's a real opportunity to demand governmental action on the basis of international human rights obligations, which I'm just learning about. I'm not a lawyer, but the international human rights obligations that Canada has signed on to provide a powerful argument in favor of what we seek. And there are developments occurring now in terms of mechanisms by which NGOs can ask the UN to demand Canada act in these areas, and we'll be looking to exploit those. Problems for organizing to combat poverty, and I call these barriers to progress. Very quickly, we are in a recession, and I think in a recession we're going to see some retrenchment of citizens or individuals in terms of what they're willing to do, to share. There seems to be some evolutionary evidence that we are a hoarding species, and we see hoarding in our society already in times of plenty. We might see it even more in hard times. Public ignorance of the depth and impact of poverty. A minority of people are directly affected by this issue, but everybody is affected indirectly. But many people don't perceive it as being their problem. That's a challenge for us. Public biases about poverty, misperceptions about the poor and why people are poor. That's a big, big barrier for us. Misguided notions about work and how about work can lift people out of poverty. Canadians are working harder than ever before. We work longer hours for less or stagnant pay. And many people are working two or three jobs, part-time jobs. Some of you are probably in that category. And we're finding it very difficult to get ahead. There's also work that's not amenable to the paid labor market. And by that I mean there's work that is difficult to, well, it really, if you will, should be publicly supported. It's hard to subject it to market forces. There's also work that's valuable in our society that's not simply not amenable to paid labor. Many forms of child rearing in the home for care in the home for injured or loved ones and so forth. There's work that's involved there, but we as a society don't fully value that. Charity rather than justice. We are the opposite view. There should be a justice rather than charity issue, but many people respond to poverty from the point of view of a charitable response. There's nothing wrong with that per se, but this is fundamentally an issue of justice. Generally, small groups are working on this issue. They're financially weak. There's much turnover. There's not as much effective networking and collaboration as there could be. And finally, on the problems, federal government indifference with the current government, it's just not on their radar screen. They refuse to acknowledge it. And it's also not on the radar screen of some provinces, in particular, I think, BC and Alberta. So finally, in the last 2 minutes I have, I guess, priorities for organizing to combat poverty. I'll focus this just on the federal level because there's so much we could cover here. One, we need a formal means to measure this challenge and progress in combating it so we can talk apples to apples. So we and other groups are striving for that. We need a federal anti-poverty act to legally recognize poverty as a human rights violation and to mandate the federal role and responsibility. One of the priorities of the Harper government is to bring in an act that would sort of disempower the federal government from areas that they consider to be provincial or territorial responsibility. And a lot of this will affect social policy. Very big concern about that. We need a federal poverty action strategy. Many groups are calling for that. This would be enabled by the Anti-Poverty Act. The strategy needs to be comprehensive in its approach and linked to provincial and territorial strategies. Perhaps the single most important policy advance in our view is to expand Canada's system for basic or guaranteed income, which I'd be happy to talk more about during the discussion. And this would basically be to ensure that everyone has sufficient income above what we agree to be the poverty lines for the country. And then other key elements of the federal response are housing supports, early childhood development supports, unemployment insurance reform, and disability supports. And there's others, but we see those four or five things as being perhaps the biggest things that the federal government can and needs to do. So our group is working with another partner organization called Citizen for Public Justice to begin to frame up a new campaign that would bundle all this stuff together and seek to launch it in early 2009 and seek to engage many organizations from the community to the national level. And we'd welcome your participation. Thanks very much.